and turns amber when you have 5 minutes left and red when your time is up. As the appellant, you can reserve whatever time that you want for your rebuttal. You know that there's also a digital timer, so you can tell for yourself how much time is left at any given time. How you present your arguments, of course, is up to you, but you should be aware that we've read the briefs, and at least one of us has had an opportunity to review the record, so you may wish to make your arguments with that in mind. You should know also that our cases, our oral arguments are posted on the internet, so if you have any private or confidential information, you may be careful as to how you articulate that during your argument. And then I would ask if anybody has a cell phone to make sure it's turned off so it doesn't inadvertently interrupt us during the oral argument. And with that, thank you, Judge Daly.
Sorry.
So in that vein, I would note that in the last year or so, we've had three lawyers who are arguing their cases whose cell phones went off while they were arguing. So with that, all that having been said, we're ready to hear the oral arguments. And so you, in Hart versus the Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. My name is Franz Frechette, and I represent the appellant, who is Christopher Hart. I'd like to start right into the standard of review and the issues of evidentiary facts and ultimate conclusions of fact. As you've read in our briefs, we contend that the hearing officer agreed that there was no evidence of the time of the request. Under Woods versus City of, and County of Denver, evidentiary facts are binding on appeal. We claim as error her ultimate conclusion of fact, which also under Woods v. Denver is actually a question of law, which is reviewed de novo. So we're arguing that the evidentiary conclusion of fact of the hearing officer that there was no time of the request is accurate, or at least not clearly erroneous.
Mr. Frechette, I'd like to ask you a question about the transcript. When you're saying that the hearing officer made a finding of no evidence, what you're really saying is that you believe she agreed with your argument. Is that correct?
Well, both. She agreed with my argument, or in the very least, conceded it.
Was there any place on the record where she said, though, I make a finding of no evidence or anything of that nature?
No. The closest thing that she comes to using the words I find is in her... is in the finding, the typed findings itself, which appear at page 81 of the record, where she reads, I find Mr. Hart drove a motor vehicle, and so on. And I'll just jump down to the relevant portion. When asked if he was going to refuse a chemical test, he stated yes. Because Mr. Hart refused the test, the question of when the test was requested is moot. But to answer your question, no, she didn't say, I specifically find there is no evidence in the record. But I think a fair reading of the transcript and a fair reading of that finding, and furthermore in the transcript wherein the hearing officer says, but it doesn't matter. As a matter of pure logic, of course it matters. Whether or not, and I'm arguing, as you know, that the standard should be a two-hour standard rather than a reasonable time standard. Under either one, of course it matters. If you're going to find that the request came within a reasonable amount of time, you necessarily need to know when the request was made. Otherwise, you can't ultimately conclude that it was within a reasonable time or within 2 hours of law.
Okay, before you get
to 2 hours of driving, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No.
Before you move too much further into your argument, I just want to have one follow-up question about what the hearing officer actually said. And I don't, as I remember reading the transcript, she didn't ever say, I agree with your argument. It was more or less as you were arguing, she said, uh-huh, okay. And what my question is isn't this just as consistent with, I understand what you're saying, rather than I agree with what you're saying?
I think it could be that way if you read the one quote in isolation, and that quote appears on page 33 of the record, which is the transcript, where I'm arguing at the top at line five, there's no evidence of when the request was given, so that there's, because there's no evidence of when the request was given, there's no, the state cannot, can't carry the preponderance of the burden that he failed to cooperate such that the test could obtain, be obtained within 2 hours of driving. And she says, okay, very well. I could, yes, you could read that that way, but then if you read it in context with the bottom of that same page, line 24 to 25, which then goes on to the next page, wherein I argue there was a request to take a test, it's just that there's no evidence of when the request was given. Yes, and there, and we're talking back and forth, and I if I interrupted the hearing officer, I apologize on the record. I don't really recall the hearing. The transcript looks like I probably did. I'm sorry for that. And then I say there's no evidence that it could not be obtained within 2 hours of his driving. And then the hearing officer says, and Mr. Hart refused, so it doesn't matter. So I think a fair reading of that is either the hearing officer agreed with me or she at least conceded the point. But either way you read that, I think we all can agree, and I think it's beyond dispute, she made no finding of fact as to when the request was made.
Okay. I hate to beat a dead horse to death on this, but no, I have just one more question about that aspect of the case. When a judicial officer makes a finding of no evidence, is that really a finding of fact? Because I see a finding of fact as saying, you know, I find that the request was at a certain time or within a certain range. But when you find no evidence, that seems to be more like a legal conclusion.
I think it's an evidentiary conclusion if she says, I find that that's the raw historical data, as Wood says. She made no finding on that raw historical data. And I think she agreed with me that the raw historical data was lacking. And without that raw historical data, you cannot logically and as a matter of law conclude that the request came within a reasonable amount of time or 2 hours, whichever is you ultimately adopt as the standard. Would it have been nice if she said, I find no evidence? That would have been much preferable on hindsight, but that's 2020. But I think a fair reading of this factual record, there's no dispute that she did not make a finding as to the time of the request. And I think it's a fair and intellectually honest argument to say that she agreed with me or at least conceded that point.
Mr. Freshett, does your argument depend on our disagreeing with the holding in the Stumpf case?
No, it doesn't, actually. If the court agrees with the holding in Stumpf that the standard is a reasonable time, because there is no factual finding, or what I argue is the hearing officer's factual finding that agrees with me that there's no evidence in the record as to the time of the request, if there's no time of the request, then it's a logical impossibility to conclude that the request came within a reasonable amount of time. So in order for Mr. Hart to prevail, it really doesn't matter which standard the court adopts. I argue that it should adopt the two-hour standard in the event, and I'm just trying to cover all my bases here, if for whatever reason the case is remanded for further fact-finding, then, and if the court was to agree with me that it's a two-hour standard, then I have more to work with back when we go to further fact-finding. And I don't mean to be presumptuous that that's...
Mr. Freshett, you spent a lot of time in your brief arguing that the affidavit wasn't signed until the earliest the minute after midnight of the next day, and so therefore the time wasn't was necessarily not reasonable. Is that a fair paraphrase of what you...
It's a little inaccurate. What I'm arguing is as Judge Boris indicated, that the record is a little difficult as to the finding. What the express consent affidavit at least suggests, because we have scant amount of hard evidence in the record as to the time of the request, and because we don't have a heck of a lot to go on, at least the express consent affidavit suggests, because it's dated the following day, the time of operation is 7:30 p.m. Assuming the express consent affidavit was signed at 12:01 a.m. on the 11th, and I'm not conceding that's the time when it was signed. It could have been 11:59 p.m.
Right, I understand.
But it just, it suggests it. It's not, it may not be definitive proof, but it at least indicates or suggests a substantial delay.
But it, I guess what I was trying to arrive at is how do we determine whether any delay that occurred was reasonable or unreasonable?
You would have to know what the time of the request is in order to do that.
Well, but you've hypothesized that any request may have been made either that day or the next day, as I understand your argument. And but how do we know that even if the argument was made the next day at 11:59 p.m., that it was unreasonable?
Interestingly enough, Boom has a footnote. I believe it's footnote 4, and it's legislative history. And I forget the name of the representative, Milky maybe, who is the co-sponsor of the express consent statute, indicated that something as far out in advance as 5 hours would not be probative.
Assuming that's correct, that may have been correct when that case was decided, which was quite some time ago. So that does that necessarily mean that this parameters of reasonableness would be the same today?
That's a difficult question because no court has decided the outer parameters of a reasonable time. There's case law that says three and a half and upwards of 4 hours has been held not to be unreasonable, but I know of no case that says this amount of time is unreasonable as a matter of law. So is your question, what is a reasonable amount of time?
Yes, that's part of what I'm interested in hearing your views on.
What is a reasonable amount of time in the criminal realm has been held to be a jury question, a question of fact for the jury to decide. But because none of us have any legal authority, no cases or statutes that say 5 hours or more unreasonable, under 5 hours reasonable. We just have no guidance out there.
Did you make arguments in the court below as far as whether there was evidence to establish a reasonable amount of time, or were the arguments solely directed at the urging of the two-hour rule?
At the time, it was solely urging at the two-hour rule because that was pre-Stumpf.
And so how are we able to consider your arguments about the no evidence of a reasonable time on appeal if that wasn't litigated in the court below?
It's the same factual issue. If there was no evidence as to the time of the request, it really doesn't matter what the standard is. The standard could be a two-hour standard, a three-hour standard, a four-hour standard, or a reasonable time standard. It doesn't really matter. If there's no evidence of the time of the request, then you cannot determine whether the request was made, let's just call it timely. And whatever timely is, right now, Stumpf says a reasonable amount of time. But not knowing when the request was made, there's no basis to ultimately conclude that it was within a reasonable amount of time or 2 hours.
Isn't there some circumstantial evidence in the record suggesting that the request may have been made by 8:43 p.m.?
And I'd like to address that directly. That's the booking report. The booking report has a time stated in at 8:43 p.m. And my opponent tries to connect the dots by saying that the request was made under the narrative, Deputy Yankee's narrative, that once at the Gilpin County Jail, Mr. Hart was advised and refused. And then as there is no record evidence, and this is absolutely critical, and I bold and underline this in my reply brief, there is no record evidence that the time of the request and advisement as reflected in that narrative is the same time as the booking report. There's no record evidence to indicate that it's the same time or before or after. You have to assume my opponent assumes those facts, but does not point to anywhere in the record that those two times are the same time or even close in proximity.
C- can't you infer, isn't there a reasonable inference that they would be within close proximity?
I don't think so. I think you have to, again, in order to do that, you're going under, and I want to be clear on this, to do that, you have to go under the substantial evidence test. And I do not concede that that is the test for determining these evidentiary facts.
What is the test?
The test is the clearly erroneous test for evidentiary facts. And my citation for that is Woods at 1053.
But again, it's not that the judge or the officer found that, the request had not been made within a reasonable period of time. The officer didn't find that. Hearing officer didn't find that.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Did the hearing officer find that that the request had not been made within a reasonable period of time?
The hearing officer ultimately concluded that the request was made within a reasonable amount of time, but she did not make any evidentiary finding of fact to support that ultimate conclusion of fact. The evidentiary conclusion of fact is the raw historical data. And on that, I want to separate this out very clearly here. The evidentiary conclusion of fact, respectfully, is the hearing officer's province. It's the clearly erroneous standard, and it's obviously not clearly erroneous because there's no time stated in the record as to when the request was made. Now, you may look at the record and say, well, hearing officer, I'm out of time. May I finish my answer?
You go ahead and finish your sentence.
The hearing officer, you may say, well, if I were to look at the facts de novo, I'd disagree with you. But respectfully, and there's case law that says, and Woods v. Denver says, that evidentiary findings of fact are binding on appeal, ultimate conclusions of fact, i.e. the reasonable time standard, question of law, or mixed law and fact.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Frischer.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Anna Christina Bowman, registration number 25970, Assistant Attorney General representing the Colorado Department of Revenue Motor Vehicle Division. The record contains uncontroverted evidence that the test request was made promptly following Hart's last driving. This evidence would satisfy either the two-hour test or the reasonable time standard recently analyzed in Stumpf. The hearing officer in the district court correctly held that a driver who consents to test is not subject to revocation unless the test is performed within the specified two-hour period after driving. But there is a distinction for refusals to test. For refusals to test, in the absence of an explicit temporal limitation, Colorado law continues to require that a test need only be made within a reasonable time after driving, not necessarily within 2 hours of driving.
Ms. Bowman, isn't it true that the hearing officer did not make a specific finding as to when the request was made?
The hearing officer found that there was probable cause, and the hearing officer went directly to the interpretation of the law as with regard to reasonable time. And that's why the hearing officer, that the question of when the test was made, was requested, is moot, because Hart refused to test, and there's no question as to whether the test could have been obtained within 2 hours of the person's driving.
Right, but she never made a finding as to when the request was made. Because she just declared that the answer to that question was moot.
Yes, so according to the transcript, yes, the hearing officer did not make a specific finding as to when the test request was made. But the record, with regard to the question about circumstantial evidence, between the booking report, which placed the time of booking at 8:43, and also Deputy Enke's warrantless arrest affidavit and as well as the reporting officer narrative when it says once at the Gilpin County Jail, he was advised of the express consent law.
But it doesn't say when he was, when Mr. Hart was advised, though, does it?
No, it doesn't say that, but I think with the record, if we find, we can find that there's a reasonable inference in the record. If you look at the reports of the arresting officer as well as the booking report, my opponent did not come up with any testimony at the hearing or any evidence to discredit or to refute the hearing officer's reports. And at the hearing, and he did not, Hart did not request the officer, Deputy Enke, to be at the hearing. Therefore, he did not, he lost his chance to cross-examine Deputy Enke. And he did not present any testimony to demonstrate that there was unreasonable delay between the request to between the arrest and the request to test. And in fact, the district court found that when the arresting officer addressed the issue once at the Gilpin County Jail, that implied that there was no delay between the arrest in Rawlinsville and then when the test request was made.
Was there anything in Deputy Enke's affidavit that ties the booking time to the giving of the asking for the express consent?
Unfortunately, there is no specific time of the advisement when the test request was made. And again, I point out to the circumstantial evidence, to the reasonable inference that when he said once at the jail, he was advised of the express consent law, and that remains uncontroverted to this day.
Can anything be gleaned from the chronology of events as they're set out in the Deputy Enke's affidavit?
Yes, the chronology of events was not disputed by my opponent. At 7:30, he was observed, the erratic driving was observed, and he was stopped, and then he was visible signs of intoxication were observed, and then at 7:52, the arrest was made, and then he was at the jail at 8:43. So there was nothing in the chronology that would suggest that there was any unreasonable delay between the time that he was arrested and the time that the test request was made.
To the extent that the appellant is now arguing that there was also no finding or no evidence of a reasonable amount of time, do you agree or disagree that that was raised during the hearing?
I believe that the hearing officer just went directly to, once the hearing officer heard that there was a refusal to test, then I think that just went to the interpretation of the law. And again, issues of law, including interpretations of the hearing officer, are subject to review de novo. And there was no finding by the hearing officer as to the time the request was made, because the hearing officer did not think it was necessary, and therefore the hearing officer said it was a moot point. And also, the statute requires a law enforcement officer to provide a notice of revocation, or also called the affidavit, to the driver, but it does not require that the law enforcement officer serve such affidavit and notice of revocation at the time of the request or any other time. He just wrote that once at the jail, he advised Hart of the express consent law, and Hart refused. At that point, Hart was in the custody of the booking officer, and Deputy Enke was not required to complete the affidavit and other paperwork immediately. but he did fulfill the requirement to serve the notice of revocation to Hart. And I just wanted to point out, too, that the affidavit only recites that there was a refusal, and necessarily the refusal must have happened before the affidavit was executed, because Hart did not request the presence of Deputy Enke at the hearing. He now just throws out the possibility that the refusal did not happen until after midnight, but he has no record proof of that possibility. Without any evidence to contradict Deputy Enke's detailed reports, Hart has not shown that the decisions were clearly erroneous. Lastly, if the court agrees with Hart that there was a delay, like a four-hour delay between the tests, between the arrest and the advisement, then under Stumpf, that would be deemed reasonable time. And again, for refusals to test in the absence of an explicit temporal limitation, Colorado law continues to require that the test requested only be made within a reasonable time.
Why would four and a half hours be a reasonable time?
What's that?
Why would 4.5 hours be a reasonable time?
Well, the reasonable time standard would, you would have to take everything. It just depends on the circumstances of each case.
Well, what made 4.5 hours reasonable in this instance?
Well, if I'm just bringing that up, even if the court does not agree that there was a two-hour limit, in the absence of any testimony, you know, to the contrary.
I thought you had said under Stumpf, 4.5 hours is reasonable. I thought that's what you had said. Am I incorrect?
Yes. In Stumpf, there was a 3.5 hour delay that was caused by an accident, you know, by the time.
And what would have caused, what would have justified a 4.5 hour delay in this case?
Under this case, there was, well, there's just no evidence that presented by opposing counsel that, you know, the time of the request was unreasonable.
Doesn't the department have to establish that, though? They have to establish it's reasonable. You can't just establish, you know, 10 hours or 12 hours and then say, well, they didn't present any evidence that that was unreasonable.
Yeah, it would be, you know, it would depend on the facts of the case, on the circumstances of the case.
And so why is 4.5 hours reasonable in this case? You're not conceding that it was a 4.5 hour period, are you?
No, we're not conceding that. It's just the, you know, the date. My opponent is just looking at the time that it was, I think, signed by Deputy Enke, but you know, we don't know when, if that was a valid, a legitimate time. So we're not conceding that point. Like Stumpf, this case also presents a question of when a requested test was made and refused. As amply detailed, the record in this case supplied adequate and uncontroverted evidence that the request was made shortly after Hart's arrival at the Gilpin County Jail, which was just 1 hour and 13 minutes after Hart's last driving. Applying the legal standards set forth in Stumpf, whether the request was made within a reasonable time yields the same result based on the facts demonstrating that there was no delay in making the requested test. The hearing officer and district court correctly determined that Hart's license was properly revoked. And in conclusion, the department respectfully request that the revocation of Hart's driver's license be affirmed for a period of 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Thank you again, Mr. Freshett. We appreciate both of your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. So we have another case. It looks like counsel are now here for that, Paint Connection Plus versus Sinkey. Are counsel here for that? You may set up a counsel table.